Last Monday night, we spoke more about the Hashkafa of Pesach and Divrei Torah to share. And today's shiur is advertised in terms of halacha. Now, who here is planning to actually kosher their kitchen or participate in the koshering of a kitchen? Wow. Okay, so a couple of people. So I think then we won't spend most of our time going through koshering the kitchen, but we will spend a couple minutes doing so, because there are some of you who are, and anyway, it's not going to hurt to learn how to do it. So, generally speaking, maybe what we will skip is koshering pots and pans and the like, and the reason is because most people buy new or have special kosher Pesach pots and pans and silverware, and that's a good idea. They can be koshered, and last year we actually talked about how to kosher them, but I think that most people don't kosher anymore and they just have Pesach stuff, and that's a good idea. But there's some things that it's not so easy to just have a Pesach version of it, like ovens and sinks and countertops. So those do have to be koshered. So that's what we'll briefly discuss. So let's start with the sink. So koshering the sink is possible if you have a sink made out of material that could be koshered, like stainless steel. Thankfully, most of our sinks are stainless steel. Some people have porcelain sinks or the like. Those can't be koshered. If you can't kosher your sink, you should get a basin and use the basin such that you put your kosher pots and pans in the basin, not in the sink, and that would solve the problem. But if you have a stainless steel sink, or I guess a granite sink or something like that, then it in fact can be kosher. Now, there's a debate among the poskim as to how to kosher a sink. And I'll briefly describe the debate because it relates to a basic question in Hilchos Kashrus. The basic rule of Hilchos Kashrus is kibowa lo kach polto. What that means is that the way in which the food was absorbed, so too, that is the way in which it's secreted. Now, what do we mean by food being absorbed? So the answer is as follows. The Torah tells us about koshering utensils. And it tells us this rule. It tells us that anyone know where the Torah talks about koshering? What's the context? Midian. That's correct. Clay Midian. Remember, the Jewish people waged a war against Midian, and they conquered Midian. They came home with some booty. So they took home some pots and pans. The problem is, of course, the Midianites didn't keep kosher. It's in that parsha that the Torah tells us both about Hechsher Kelim and Tvilas Kelim. People sometimes get confused about this. Tvilas Kelim, which is immersing the new Kelim in the mikvah, has nothing to do with koshering it. It doesn't help in terms of koshering it. It's done separately, and you should, theoretically, if you had to do both, you would first kosher and then tovel. So the idea of koshering is the premise that the Torah says in the laws of kashrus, tam ki'ikar. What does tam ki'ikar mean? Tam ki'ikar is the tam is, meaning to say the taste, either the taste of chametz food or the taste of non-kosher food, is ki'ikar. It's like the actual food. What that means is that if something has the taste of non-kosher food, it is in fact non-kosher, even though there's no mamashus, actual physical non-kosher food in here. Now, what is tam? Tam is not metaphysical, it is physical. They're small particles. They're known as blios. Small particles known as blios. And sometimes, for example, if you cook something in a dish, even if you wash the dish, you will notice that it might be discolored, or you might notice the taste that's absorbed into the walls of the dish or the pot could be secreted into the next thing you cook. Now, the truth is, we do not notice tam very much anymore. And the reason is that most of our pots, for example, are stainless steel. And stainless steel, though it is somewhat porous, is not very porous, which means to say that not many bleos get absorbed into the stainless steel pots, which means, generally speaking, you can't actually taste the thing you cooked the last time and you cook this time. It's pretty clear that in the olden days, when their metals and their alloys were not as solid, if you actually cooked something today and then you cook something in the same pot tomorrow, there's a pretty good chance you'll taste a little bit of today's food and tomorrow's food, even if you've washed the pots. Nowadays, pots are much better made, and you probably, generally speaking, if you wash your pots and pans, don't taste what you ate yesterday today. But, nevertheless, it could happen. And therefore, one still needs to have a separate set of milchiks and fleishig pots or milchiks and fleishig plates. Because otherwise, if you use the same pots for fleishiks and then milchiks, you could have little bleos of fleishiks in your milchiks food. And likewise, if you use the same pans without koshering them for chametz and for Pesach, then the same thing could happen. So the way to kosher it is, like we said, kibboa lo kach polta. What does that mean? The way it goes in is the way it comes out. So let's say it's a pot, and you cooked non-kosher food in the pot. So to kosher it, you'd boil water, and the bleos of the non-kosher food would be absorbed into the water, and it would be okay. Again, the details we're not going to work out today. But what does that mean for a sink? So how do you kosher a sink? Well, how would a sink become chametz stick? Right, what do you say? How's your sink chametz stick? Food fell in. Okay, well, I'll give you an example. Let's say you make spaghetti. And when you strain your spaghetti with the spaghetti water, so the water is full of chametz, goes straight from the pot, and it will hit the floor of the sink. That's known as iroi. Iroi is when you pour from a pot into something. So, just like it goes out, in, so too it comes out. So we're going to say that if you could want to kosher your sink, assuming it's a material that could be koshered, like stainless steel, so you're going to take boiling hot water from a pot and pour it on the bottom of the sink. Just like it became non-kosher or chametz stick through iroi, so too it comes Pesach stick through iroi. Now, there's a rule, which is unless you have shishim, you must make sure that you didn't use this pot, or in this case, the sink, for 24 hours. So if you want to kosher your sink, you can't use it for 24 hours before you kosher it. Now, that's a big pain, right? You're not going to use your kitchen sink for 24 hours. What are you going to do? You have to eat. So really, you can use it. You just can't use it for anything hot. If you use it for cold stuff, that is no effect. So don't use your sink, when you want to kosher your sink for Pesach, don't use it for anything hot for 24 hours. Now, the trick that I recommend, so you don't accidentally turn on the hot water, is to shut off the hot water valve under the sink for 24 hours. Or you could kosher on Motzei Shabbos, and then you won't have used it for hot water for 24 hours. The problem with that is usually you want to wash your dishes on Motzei Shabbos. So unless you're already having Pesach thick things, but you probably didn't because you didn't kosher yet. So just turn off the hot water valve under your sink, and then you won't put anything. You'll remember not to pour spaghetti into it. 24 hours, and you're set. That is, and then you go ahead, and you kosher it. How do you kosher it? By pouring hot water on every part of the sink, the bottom, but also you want to do the walls, because the walls also might have had iroi hit them. Usually you start from the bottom, you go up to the top, you should make sure to do the faucet, underneath the faucet, that's a tricky part. Some posts can recommend taking out the aerator, because that's at the end of your sinks, you'll notice there's a aerator. That's done to save water, for the most part. It's what makes the sink water come out bubbly looking. And you could take that out for Pesach, or take it out and kosher it separately. Mikra din, I don't think you really have to, because there's no actual chametz in it, but many poskim say better not to kosher it, because it's small and thin, and it's hard to get clean. So you could take out your aerator if you want to. It's very easy. and you kosher the whole area. I recommend starting from the bottom up. So start first from the bottom of the sink. Also take out the filter at the bottom. If you have one of those things, you could kosher that for Pesach. But the easiest thing is to just get a new one for Pesach. They cost 99 cents. So get a new filter for Pesach and start from the bottom up. The bottom is obviously the most important part. Make sure you directly pour every single spot from a boiling hot pot of water, or you could use a kumkum or something like that. Work your way up the walls and the like. Preferably, you should dry the sink before you kosher it so that the cold water droplets don't cool it down. And that's the way you kosher a sink, according to most opinions. Now, I say most opinions because there's some that are machmir. Why would anyone be machmir? Else, Pesach, of course you want to be machmir. So the reason to argue for chumrah is the following. Well, I told you an example of how your sink becomes chametzdik, like by pouring the, straining the spaghetti, right? Well, let's say the following. Let's say, actually, some of the spaghetti fell out of my pot and fell directly onto the bottom of the sink. Well, that's different. Why might that be different? Because there is an opinion known among others as the Marshal. The Marshal holds that Dover Gush, a solid, is like a Kli Rishon. And if it's, this is very famous in Hilchos Shabbos as well, because of the opinion of the Magen Avraham. And if it's like a Kli Rishon, well, that presents more of a problem, because then you can't do Hagalah. You can't kosher it with just Eroi, because it needs a Kli Rishon. Oh my goodness. So what are you going to do then if you follow this opinion? So there are all sorts of theories what people do. Some people use an Evan Melubenis. They heat up a stone or something till it's very, very hot. Then they fill up their sink. Usually you only want to do it about halfway, because otherwise it'll never work. And you try to boil water in your sink. I know my next-door neighbor, Rabbi Ezra Schwartz, does this in his sink. And he mamish boils water in his sink. Well, that would work for sure. Then it's mamish a Kli Rishon. But many other poskim say you don't need to do this. Why? Because we don't really poskim like the Maharshal. And moreover, anyway, Rov Tashmisho is al yidei Iroi. And there are a number of other factors and the like. If you don't, and therefore I think one is the right to be lenient, you could just do Eroi, which does take a while, but it's not very hard. You know, takes some time because you have to boil up all that water, but it's not such a big deal. Only takes a couple of minutes, and do it that way. And then, if you want to be choshesh for the opinion of the Marshal, instead of trying to boil water in your sink, just get a sink grate, which goes ahead and prevents the dishes in the sink from touching the bottom of the sink, and that's good enough. And if something falls through, anyway, Mikra Din, we think you don't need an Evan Luban. So that's the two ways to kosher sinks. Again, the mainstream position is through pouring the boiling water, and the more machmir view is through the Evan Lubanis. Okay, so the next, yeah. No, you want it to be much hotter than Yatzalot. You want it to be Roschen. Just like when, you know, you... Oh, yeah. Don't have Yatzalot as water for the 24 hours before you kosher the sink. That's correct. It should be boiling hot water, straight from, don't hurt yourself. Rule number one in kashrus is to be careful, okay? Especially when you're pouring the boiling hot water, be careful that you don't burn yourself. You can take off your glasses before you pour it, otherwise they get all fogged up and you can't see anything. But yes?
Does the chametzdik pot?
Technically speaking, you can use a chametzdik pot to kosher your sink for Pesach. It might sound weird. But the minhag is to use a kosher Pesach pot to boil, to kosher. So if you can, that's what you should do. So you kosher your stove first, you take out your Pesach pot, and then you do the sink. That's the way we do it.
Why do you kosher
the bottom? There's a couple of reasons. One is because the bottom's the most important. The two is because otherwise it'll be wet already. Okay. So, that's not ma'akev, but just the Eitz HaTovah. Okay. We're not going to talk about kashering a microwave because I don't recommend kashering microwaves for Pesach. Does anybody here want to kasher their microwave? Good. So then we could skip it. If you feel that you need to, then you may be able to, but you may not. Depends on how your microwave works. So we could speak afterwards, or you can take a look at the Pesach guide that I sent out in the shul mailing. Okay. The next thing people want to know how to kosher is the counters, as we said, because counters isn't so easy to simply get a Pesach version. The truth is, it is. That's what we do. The easiest thing to do, in my opinion, instead of koshering counters, even if you have a kosherable counter surface, is to just cover it. What we do is we cover our counters with corrugated plastic, which is like cardboard made out of plastic. And you could buy it at a houseware store for very cheap. And it works very well. It's like, a centimeter, a little less thick. You could even save it from year to year. We've been using the same ones for several years. Store them under our beds. And then, obviously, you should clean your counters very well. There are some opinions that say you should kosher your counters and cover them. I don't think you have to worry about that. And that makes things much easier. But some people say, why did I spend $10,000 on granite counters if I'm going to not be able to kosher them? So they want to kosher their counters. Well, then how do you kosher your counters? So the first question is, they have to be made out of a material that can be koshered. Stone can be koshered. So if you have granite, it could be koshered. There are some opinions that say you shouldn't kosher plastic, or at least you shouldn't kosher plastic for Pesach, in which case they say that if you're granite counter is sealed with sealant and your sealant is plastic, then you shouldn't kosher your granite counter. And that is what some posts can recommend. Therefore, they say you should cover it anyway. I think one can rely on a lenient view to kosher counters, even if they're covered with sealant. Of course, you can never kosher them if they're cracks or anything like that that might have crumbs of chametz into them or the like. But assuming that your granite counter or the like is not have crumbs in it, I actually think, technically speaking, one could even be lenient to kosher the types of counters that we have here in Heights. Not many people in the Heights have granite counters. The common counters in the Heights, even if you think that they're granite, they're probably formica or plastic laminate, which is wood covered with plastic that's meant to look like granite, not actually granite. There are some people, but I think most counters I've seen are plastic laminate around here. And again, there are lenient views that they could be koshered as well. So let's say you want to kosher your counter. What do you do? So this actually brings us back to the same debate that we had last time, which is, according to most opinions, you could use Eroi, which is pouring the boiling hot water on the countertops. Some opinions say, no, you have to be choshish for davar gush, in which case you need to, again, use an oven milubenis. Now, it's hard to boil water on your counter, so there are all sorts of theories as to how to do it, to take a boiling hot stone and put it on the water that causes it to boil, or you could try ironing your counters. Don't do it unless you know what you're doing. It's better not to get electrocuted. Or you could try using steam blowers and boiling the water that way and the like. If you don't know what you're doing, I wouldn't do that either. The truth is, you could make an argument. Now, you might decide that once I tell you this, you're not going to listen to anything else I'm going to say tonight, because clearly I am unfit to be a rabbi. But you could make a very strong case that you don't really need to kosher your counters at all. And the reason is because we don't eat off our counters. It's true that the Shulchan Aruch says that you need a kosher shulchanos. And again, the Mishnah Brura quotes the Marivayel and thinks l'chatchila you should do even an Evan Milubenis. But we don't eat off our counters. It's true, food sometimes falls on our counters, but we don't really eat on off our counters. And that being the case, you could make the case Rabbi Willig thinks mikra din, you don't even have to kosher counters at all. Just clean them very well. But even though Rabbi Willig thinks that's the halacha, I think they kosher their, they cover their counters in their home. And the minhag Yisrael is to cover your counters. But that is a reason why I think there's more room to adopt a lenient view that Eroi is enough, even though the Mishnah Berurah does recommend following the Marivayel, that you should use the Evan the Lubenis to the more stringent opinion. So that is in terms of counters. Okay, any questions in terms of counters? Again, some people who don't want to kosher anything but the actual stone won't kosher the seal in between. I think one could be lenient and, again, pour the boiling water on that seal, assuming that there's no cracks in it. Now, koshering counters is harder than a sink. And the reason is because they're much larger. And sinks are very handy because they have a drain at the bottom. Counters don't, which means you make a big mess. And it's boiling hot water. So it's not fun. You're always like mopping up the water with like towels as you kosher and trying to hit every spot with it. It's a big pain. But you can do it. Many people do it. That's maybe why many people go to hotels, because they don't want to kosher their counters. I think it's better to kosher your counter instead of going to a hotel, but that's a different story. But as I said, there's really a very simple solution. The corrugated plastic, or when we were growing up, we had these like wooden slats that we put on top of the counters. And that really makes things much easier. It might not look as elegant, but it saves a lot of time. And I'm a big fan of not overburdening yourself getting ready for Pesach. Of course, one has to follow the halacha, and one should not be inappropriately lenient. But I know Rabbi Willig always quotes Rosh Scheinberg when discussing cleaning for Pesach. Rosh Scheinberg says, somebody wrote up a shir he once gave, and he said that people go ahead when they're cleaning for Pesach, and they mamish, they kill themselves cleaning. They don't do Pesach cleaning, they do spring cleaning. And they work so hard to clean up every crumb from their house. And then what happens is, they're exhausted by the time Pesach comes. And instead of having a geschmack, lebedik, simchadik seder, they're worn out and dozing off. And Scheinberg said, simchas yantif is probably, you could make the case, is a mitzvah deraisa. And a lot of the things that people do in terms of cleaning for Pesach are chumra al gabe chumra. So again, we don't want to say you shouldn't clean. You should clean. And there's a long tradition of being very machmir. And there's reason for it. And we don't want to make fun of any of those people that are being very machmir. But you should also keep in mind that Simchas Yantif is very important. And it's important to know what's actually some things that you have to do and what's a chumrah. And what's not even a chumrah, it's just spring cleaning that takes the guise of Pesach cleaning. And again, I have no objections to spring cleaning either. But one wants to make sure that they're able to enjoy Yantif, and that it doesn't end up being such a burden that it causes a lot of anxiety and it takes away from that Simchas Yantif. And that's something that that should be kept in mind. Yeah. Yes, if you want to do two layers, you can. You know, whenever you're dealing with tinfoil, there's a concern that it might rip. So you could do a couple of layers, or heavy-duty tinfoil. Now they have this super heavy-duty tinfoil. In theory, if you are going to use that type of cover for your counter, you should be careful not to put pots on your counter. In theory, this is a somewhat of a far-fetched concern, But then, especially if there's a liquid in that gets in between your foil and your counter, and then you put a hot pot, theoretically you could have problems. Again, it's a little far-fetched. But anyway, you're probably not going to want to do that. So if you're going to just cover them like that, you can. And then just, you know, put a trivet or a towel or a plate or something like that. Don't actually put the hot pots on your counter directly. Anyway, if you're using contact paper, you're going to want to do that. One thing to keep in mind if you are going to cover your counters with contact paper is that sometimes it leaves a very annoying sticky residue after Pesach that's hard to clean off. So that's one of the many milos, I think, to the corrugated plastic model, which is cheaper, easier, and it doesn't leave any residue on your counters. Okay. So again, when it comes to countering, let's just counters, we'll review. There are three questions. First of all, can you kosher it? If it's stone, the answer is yes. As we mentioned, some won't kosher if it's sealant, some won't kosher if it's synthetic. As I said, mikra din rei willig thinks you don't even have to kosher them at all. Then the question B is, how do you kosher it? So here again, there's two options. You could do iroi, or the more machmir view is evan meluban. And finally, number three, some have a minhag to cover after koshering, at least if they're not sure it's smooth, and the like. Now, this same thing holds true with respect to tables, though I don't know anyone who koshers their table. Instead, people just cover it, and that's fine. All you have to do is cover it. I know in our home, my wife likes to do two covers, so we first cover the table with like a plastic tablecloth. You could like use those disposable ones, tape it up so that's totally covered, and then you put another tablecloth on top, and that's okay. Technically speaking, I don't, you know, everybody covers their refrigerator shelves and lining shelves. I don't think you need to do that at all, because theoretically you could put a hot pot onto the shelf in the refrigerator and then do it on Pesach, and then if there's a liquid there, it could be a problem. I don't think people do that so much, but many people anyway like to cover their shelves. When I told my wife she didn't need to cover the shelves of the refrigerator, she threw me out of the kitchen and told me that, what do I know about Hilchos Pesach? If I was to be trusted, the whole kitchen would be chametzdik. Another reason why you might want a advantage of covering your shelves, you should obviously clean the refrigerator very well. And if you cover the shelves, so theoretically if you missed a spot of, where food might have been left, so then you don't have to worry about that. So covering your shelves is not a bad idea. And again, nowadays it's really very easy because they make for you these, you just buy the refrigerator shelf covers. Make sure to poke holes in for circulation if you have an old-fashioned fridge. Otherwise, the bottom shelves won't get refrigeration. But that's very easy to do. It's probably a good idea. Okay. So that is in terms of tables and counters and refrigerators. Tablecloths and dish towels, all they have to do is be laundered. Rav Eliashiv thinks that you have to wash it in yadso lettuce but water, which is a chumrah, especially because generally speaking, we don't anyway put hot pots directly on a tablecloth, but that is a chumrah. But the pashtus is, if you do a regular cycle and with soap, that's good enough. Rav Moshe is quoted as saying you shouldn't kosher a plastic tablecloth. It's a big chiddush, again, because you don't usually put hot pots directly on the tablecloth. The pashtus is that if you just scrub down a plastic tablecloth very well, that's good enough. but it's easy enough to buy a new plastic tablecloth, and that way you also don't have to worry about scrubbing it down and the like. So it's a good idea. It's more of a shiloh when it comes to a high chair. There's a question that a number of people have asked me this year. How do we kosher our high chair? So I don't think you have to buy a new high chair for Pesach. That's a big expense. You could try covering it. Covering it has two problems. One is kids like to rip off the covering. And number two is that it could leave that sticky film on your high chair tray after Pesach's over anyway. So if you want to cover it, you can. I think there's room for leniency for a number of reasons. The main reason, there are three or four other reasons, but the main reason is because you don't put hot food, yatzo lettuce bowl food, on the high chair tray directly anyway. And the reason is because you don't want your baby to burn themselves. Usually anyway you put the food on a plate, but even if you do put the food directly on the tray, it's not going to be hot. And therefore you should just scrub it very well. If you want to kosher it with Eroi, pouring boiling hot water on it, you can. It's not a bad idea, but I don't even think you need to do that. Just scrub it, clean it as best you can. Also, you know, the chair is a good idea to clean well, because there's all sorts of crumbs there. Do your best to clean it. If there are cracks in your high chair tray that you can't clean out, so what should you do? And this is true for other things like your chairs and the like, but let's say high chair part, right? What are you supposed to do? Do you have to like spend 3 hours with a toothpick trying to get out every crumb? So I don't think you need to. The recommendation that I have is just spray it with Clorox or the like. And at that point, if there is any food left, which there likely will be, there are crumbs in those cracks that are very hard to get to, so they will be nifsal me'achilas kelev, which means that they're inedible. One of the chumras that we do have of Pesach, the rest of the year, technically speaking, if food is inedible to a human, it is not considered unkosher. You still should eat it, but technically it's not unkosher. Pesach, we're a little more machmir. We say it has to be nifsal me'achilas kelev, which means even inedible for a dog. Okay, but I think that if you sprayed little crumbs with Clorox or the like, no dog would eat it either. Which means that these crumbs, after they're sprayed, are not chametzdik, and you don't have to worry about them. Anyway, nobody's going to eat them. But after they're sprayed, certainly no one's going to eat them. So, and that's true for other spots, like if you're cleaning your refrigerator, and, you know, like, for example, in that little part where it closes or the like, there are cracks, and you're very worried, oh no, there are crumbs of food in these cracks, what am I going to do? So just spray them with your Clorox or whatever cleaning agent that's inedible you use, and that will solve that problem. Yes?
What does one keep one's dog on
Pesach? Whew, that is a good question. Do you have a dog? Wait till after Pesach. Feeding a dog on Pesach can be a problem. That's because most dry dog foods have wheat or oats in the first ingredient, or among the first ingredients. And the halacha is that not only can't you eat chametz, but you can't be nana from chametz. And feeding your dog is being nana from chametz. There are certain kunsen tricks that people do. They sell their dog, and then they sell the dog food and the like. There's someone in this room, won't name names, that wanted to sell their fish pond last year for Pesach. I'll tell you a story about our fish growing up. I'm not recommending any of you try this for your own fish, but my sister and I won fish at a carnival. And fish at a carnival usually last like 2 weeks if you're lucky. Right? Goldfish, you know. Mine lived 9 years, and my sister's, Rachel's, lived 11 years. So you wonder, what is the secret of longevity in goldfish? So they have all these studies nowadays. They're being followed up. Nobody's quite sure. But in mice, it certainly is true, and some people think it's true in humans, that if you basically live on starvation diets, you live a long life. So the secret to long life in goldfish is not feeding them. So we wouldn't feed our goldfish on Pesach. We would go away to summer camp. My parents would surely never feed them. We'd come back, we'd give them food. And I think that was the secret to the longevity of our goldfish. We would starve them. Now, I'm not sure if that's Tzar Bali Chaim or not, but that's it. It's for a different shear. Anyway, I know someone who has fish, and they didn't like my starvation diet idea, but they say their fish are happiest on Pesach, because on Pesach they feed their fish bloodworms. And you know, you go to the bait store, the stuff that are used to go fishing, and it's very geschmack apparently, and they're not even chametz. All right, especially if you have pet sharks or something. But anyway, back to your dog food question. So the best thing to do is to get, you know, non-dry food, like the cans or the like, and that is not going to, you know, look at the ingredients, but you can get kosher for Pesach food that way. In other words, that doesn't, you should buy it before Pesach and look at the ingredients, make sure that it doesn't have any you know, wheat or oats or the like, and then that's okay. So the cans, not all cans, but you could find cans that way, I'm told. I remember once I was it was near Pesach, I was going shopping, and it was in Safeway, which is otherwise known as Trafeway. So a lady from the community was in front of me in line, and she had all this meat. So she like looks at me and says, "Don't worry, it's not for me. It's for my pet dog." So apparently she would mamish buy meat. She didn't want to buy kosher meat. That's very expensive. So she would feed her dog non-kosher meat on Pesach. And she told me that, she said that it's not only my Mekayim Simchas Yantif on Pesach, but my dog is also Mekayim Simchas Yantif on Pesach, because he gets the best food of the year on Pesach. He gets real. She said that for a couple days after Pesach, it takes her dog doesn't like to eat when she goes back to the chametz food. It takes him a couple of days before he like resigns himself to the food, the garbage they give him the rest of the year. But anyway, but you're correct that dog food on Pesach is an issue, but it's an issue that can be solved. And for more information, speak to people that have dogs, and they maybe could give you some other tips. But it is an issue. All right. So I think we're done for koshering, because I'd like to talk about a couple other things that come up. The next thing I want to talk about is, what is chametz? So when I was young, people used to get and they still have it, Rabbi Blumenkranz Pesach book. Rabbi Blumenkranz was nifter a couple of years ago, but they still put out his Pesach guide. I think his children put it out. And if you read his guide for Pesach, you would get the impression that you have to check your shampoo and your deodorant and all of your toiletries and cosmetics and the like for Pesach, and they have lists and things like that and the like. And you'll see in the Pesach forms that I'm going to give out, says things to sell, and one of them is toiletries. And I include that on the list, not because I think you need to sell your toiletries, but because many people think that you need to sell your toiletries, and they follow Rabbi Blumenkranz books, and therefore they want to sell their shampoo and the like, and they do. It's true. They have shampoos. I once saw shampoo with wheat in it. I don't know if I bought it. I think I might have just seen it in the store, but it does exist. So where is this coming from? So let's define, what is chametz? So chametz is anything that comes from the five grains, wheat, barley, oats, belt, and rye, that's combined with water or something like that, and then with time rises, and that's what chametz is. And usually we say when it's flour and water, it's 18 minutes. It could happen quicker with heat and other things, and certainly if there's yeast. Now, we mentioned before that there's a stringency, which is that even if it's inedible to a human, but if it's edible to a dog, it's still a problem. However, if it's inedible for a dog, it's okay. Now, you don't yet have a dog, so we're not going to be able to experiment on your dog. But I would imagine that if you try to give your wheat-based shampoo to your future dog, it wouldn't eat it. And that's one of the reasons also why I think medicines and the like, you don't have to worry. Dogs don't eat medicine. Not talking about liquid medicines that you have to make sure they're chametz free, but pills that you swallow are almost certainly inedible. And that's why those are okay. So that's the reason why basically toiletries are not a problem. Now there are some, where was Rabbi Blumenkranz coming from? So there are some poskim based off of the Nesivos and the like, who are medayik from the lashon of nifsal me'achilas kalev, that not only does it have to be inedible, but it can't be made edible. This is relevant especially because of denatured alcohol. A lot of products have alcohol in them, cosmetics and the like, perfume. Now, you can't drink that. If you were to drink that, you would die. It's because it's denatured. But if you know what you're doing, you can boil it or this or that and figure out a way to make it edible. Distill it. And, if you ever go to a alcohol rehab place, they won't let you bring this stuff in. I remember when, many years ago, before your time, Kitty Dukakis, Michael Dukakis's wife, was like, I don't know, she like distilled her deodorant or something and to drink. In other words, if you're an alcoholic, you might do anything. So, it could happen. And that's why some poskim are machmir, and they try to find out if it's alcohol, which type of alcohol is it? Is it grain-based alcohol? Is it kitnios? You could be makel and the like. Other poskim say no. Many poskim say that if right now it's totally inedible, even for a dog, the fact that you could do some type of kunz, a chemist in a laboratory can somehow or another figure out how to make this edible, since right now it's inedible, it's okay. And that's a basis for leniency. And again, I recommend that you check the Pesach guide that I sent out, or there are many other excellent guides you can use. Available for free is the OU guide, the CRC guide, the Star K guide, all available on their websites. They're better than my guide, so in fact, most of the information I got on my guide is from theirs, their guide. So you could go ahead and take a look there, but most of the time it's not a problem. So what are you looking for when you clean your house for chametz? So you're not looking for dirt. Dirt isn't chametz. There's really two issues that we have to be concerned about when you search for chametz and clean for chametz. One is the Torah says you can't own chametz. Chametz, as we said before, is a very severe prohibition. Not only does the Torah prohibit eating chametz, and not only are you not allowed to benefit from chametz, but you can't even own chametz. However, most poskim say that's with respect to chametz that's bigger than a kezias. Smaller than a kezias, meaning crumbs, you're not in violation of bal yira'ah u'bal yimatzeh. However, There's still a concern with crumbs. What's the concern with crumbs? That they might get into your food. And another chumrah of chametz is that chametz is not batel. What does that mean? Usually, for most other foods, we would say the food is batel b'shishim. A little bit of non-kosher food gets mixed into your kosher food, but it's a tiny drop. It's 1%. Can't impart any taste, it's okay. But on Pesach, or Machmir, at least on Pesach, or Machmir, that even a tiny mashu of chametz renders it chametzdek. So we really want to make sure that one crumb of chametz does not get into our food. So that's the second reason why we clean for chametz. But as long as both of those concerns are not relevant, then you're okay. So let's take an example. Now, again, there's some poskim that are machmir. They think that you have to get every single crumb of chametz for your house. But I think that one could follow the lenient opinion here and only get rid of crumbs. Again, obviously, you know, if you can get rid of crumbs, you should. But you don't have to drive yourself crazy getting rid of crumbs as long as you're sure that there's no chance that they're going to get into your food. So let's give an example. Do you have to clean your svarim? So there were some gedolim, chazanish, who would clean his svarim for chametz. I think the svarim, chazanish didn't have so many svarim. That's because he knew everything. But he would clean the svarim for chametz. Somebody yesterday showed me a text that they got. I finished Shas. And then the next text was, now it's time to start cleaning the Shulchan Aruch. Okay. So the answer is that, well, are you going to have a kezias of chametz in your svarim? No. Well, what about crumbs? So the answer is it depends. If when you learn, you sometimes have chametz around. I do. I oftentimes eat with my svarim, or even bring them to the table, or the way, even if I don't eat with them, I bring them to the Shabbos table for a Dvar Torah. So then they definitely might have crumbs. So I could either clean them for crumbs, or alternatively, I could simply make sure not to bring my svarim to the table on Pesach. So that's what I do. I make sure svarim, you know, like my Haggadahs, I want to make sure those are chametz free. So when I go ahead and I'm preparing for the Haggadah, and I want to learn, so I go ahead. If I want to learn at the table, I take a towel, I spread it out on the table, I open up my Haggadah, make sure no crumbs get into my Haggadah. And therefore I can bring my Haggadah to my... But let's say my chumash. So if I don't want to clean my chumash for Pesach, then I don't bring my chumash to the table where I'm eating. So either I learn not on the dining room kitchen table, or if I'm going to, I'll spread out a towel and the like. And that way, I don't have to clean my svarim for Pesach. And the same thing is true for other things. And if you keep those guidelines in mind, so then you don't have to drive yourself crazy worrying about every crumb. Again, you have to worry about crumbs that might come in contact with food, so in the kitchen and on the tables and, you know, chairs and the like, that's where you have to be more careful, things like that. Toys. Some people, they wash all their toys. I know someone, they put their toys in the washing machine, in the bathtub. That's not crazy. So what do we do? So that's a real concern, because toys do end up on the table. And you can't always tell a three-year-old not to bring their toys to the table. So, but at the same time, to clean all the toys, that's a big pain. So what we do is we take most of the toys out of circulation for Pesach. And if you want to bring your kids a lot of Simchas Yontif, you can get them a special new toy for Pesach. But let's say their favorite toys, the toys that they like, that they play with a lot, that might have crumbs and might end up on a table. So those we check. It's not so hard to check toys for Pesach. I don't think you have to use a washing machine or anything like that, but, you know, we take all the toys out of the bin, We inspect them, make sure there's no crumbs. We inspect the bin, maybe wipe it down if that's necessary, and then we put them back. Because again, that's a concern. Those could end up on the table. That could end up in food. So then you want to do it. Okay. As we said from Rav Scheinberg before, you don't have to, you know, don't go too crazy and wreck your simchas yantif. Any place that is ein machnisin bo chametz, you don't have to check for chametz. So your bedikas chametz is only in the places where you do bring chametz. If you have kids, that's everywhere. You might not bring chametz, but you never know where they will bring chametz. If you only have adults living in your house, so if you know that there are parts of the house that no chametz was brought, you don't have to check, right? You don't have to check your attic, probably, even if you have kids, I assume, because nobody brings chametz into the attic. So when you're doing the bedikah, you should take it seriously. You should look. I don't think you need to use a flash. You need to use a candle. You could use a flashlight. We start off with a candle for old time's sake. But after a while, we stop using a candle. I don't know how to use candles. I'm so afraid of burning the house down that when I use a candle, I don't think I do such a good job. You'll do a much better job with a flashlight. So it's a serious bedikah. You should look at places where you bring chametz in all places. There is a custom of putting out 10 pieces of chametz. You only need to do this if you're doing the bedikah when you make the bracha, which this night is Sunday night. So if you're doing, let's say you're leaving on Friday, so then if you're leaving this Friday, when would you do your bedikah? The last night you're home. So you do the bedikah Thursday night. So then you don't need to bother with the bread pieces because you're not doing, you're not making a bracha anyway. I think that putting out the bread pieces is very important for a different reason. Not actually the reason that some poskim say. Some poskim say because it's a bracha of atala, because maybe you won't actually find chametz. So I don't think that's correct, because, and not just me, many poskim, because the mitzvah is to search. And if you search and you don't find, you've done the mitzvah. It's appropriate to make a bracha. It's actually a different reason, because most people clean their house before they get around to doing the bedikah. Already tonight and last week we've been cleaning our house. We've been going through room to room, cleaning and then what happens after we clean a particular room? We say, no more chametz in that room, right? Okay. So it could be that that room is no longer makom shemachnisin bo chametz. And we said before that you don't have to do a bedikah in a makom shemachnisin bo chametz, which would mean that if you've cleaned your whole house carefully for Pesach, you've essentially done a bedikah, and your house is not a makom shemachnisin bo chametz, in which case the bracha you make would be a bracha levatala. That's why you should put out the pieces. And it's also a good idea, gets the kids excited. Make sure that they don't do such a good job hiding that you won't be able to find it. So have an adult supervision or keep a list or something like that. Okay. There's really much more to say, but we're out of time. So I want to wish everyone... Are there any questions, first of all? Okay, amazing. Great. Oh, that's okay also. Great to have questions. Yes. Okay, so let's talk about that right now. That will be the last thing we talk about before we get into the selling of the chametz. So we have a couple of options here. If you are not going to be in your house for all of Pesach, not you, not any Jew or the like, then you could fill out Form A and not clean for Pesach at all. And what you're going to do if you do this option is you will lease your entire apartment before the obligation of bedikah kicks in. The obligation of bedikah kicks in Sunday night. So I'm going to go meet with Mr. Brown Sunday afternoon before sunset. And I'm going to, on your behalf, lease your apartment to Mr. Brown before sunset on Sunday night, and as well as sell him all the chametz. Now, what that will basically mean is that you're going to be homeless. Practically, though, that means that you don't have an obligation to do bedika. You have an obligation to bedika on your own home, and it's not your home any longer. It's Mr. Brown's. So, if you do that option, you do not have to clean at all. That's option A. Now, some people don't want to do that option. Why not? What could be better? They want to fulfill the mitzvah of bedika. Now, it's not clear whether that is something that you should do. It gets to the heart of what the nature of bedika is. Maybe there's only a mitzvah to do bedika if you have a house. If you don't have a house, then you don't have to do bedika. Others say, that's not ideal, because you're sort of doing a kinech, a chap, to try to get yourself out of a mitzvah. So then, you could do a regular sale, and you could bedika on your own and put the chametz in designated places. If you're going to be home for Pesach, then you have to seal those places and tape them up and the like. If you're not going to be home at all, you don't have to worry about them, but put them in designated places. Do a bedika. If you're doing a bedika Sunday night, you'd make a bracha and the like. And then you'd follow the guidelines that we said before. Except, if you're not going to be home the entire time, you don't have to worry about the second concern that we said of the crumbs getting into the food. You just have to worry about anything that's a kezias or larger. Then there's a middle option, the pshara. What's the pshara? The middle option? For someone who doesn't want to clean their whole house, but still wants to do a bedika. How do you get your cake and eat it too? What you do is, we're going to lease your entire apartment Sunday afternoon to John Brown, with the exception of one room. And then you pick a room that's not going to be very hard to clean. And then you're going to do the bedika in that one room. So you're mekayim the mitzvah of bedika, but you don't have to clean your whole house because the rest of the house will be leased to John Brown. So those are the three options. Now, anyone who is going to be in their house for Pesach, even part of Pesach, or they're going to have guests staying in their house, they must do the regular mechira, which is what we call Form B. They could do Form A, but they still have to clean their house and do bedika. If you are going to be away for all of Pesach, you may use Form A, and then you could not bother cleaning. If you are going to be in Israel or anywhere to the east of New York for Pesach, then you should fill out Form A. Why? Because if you fill out Form B, I'm going to sell your chametz sometime before, on Monday morning, before the Isser chametz sets in. But if you're in Israel, so the Isser chametz will set in before I sell it. And that would be a problem. So therefore, if you're going to go ahead and be anywhere to the east of Israel, you should fill out Form A as well. Okay, so those are the two options for the two forms. I wish everyone a Chag Kasher V'Sameach. I have the forms up here. You'll fill them out and then give them to me, and we'll do a Maisa Kinyan before you leave. Okay, have a good Yom Tov. Yes.